This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 649 of the show. This is my recap summary, exciting kind of insights from the conversation I had with Dr. April Kemp of Southeastern Louisiana University. Funny side note, if you listen to all three episodes, you could tell in the first parts, I am struggling like crazy with Southeastern Louisiana University and saying it properly, coming from a place, and I think I mentioned this by the third part because I remember I realized it in the break in between recording each episode, that the reason my brain was having trouble with that is because I've never had a Southeastern or said Southeastern or lived in a place with Southeastern. It's always Southeast, right? Southeast 9th Street or something like that. Not Southeastern, and it was hilarious in my head because I was struggling so hard. Just a funny side note, and if you notice, like, I recorded the episodes with Dr. April Kemp, and then next week is the conversations that I had with Dr. Tim Butler from the same university, and obviously by the time I got to him, I was a pro at saying Southeastern Louisiana University. So it's a very funny side note if you did catch those. If not, listen to it and then watch out for that. It's quite funny just to think about how much I was struggling with it in the first one and a half of the three conversations. So now let's dive into my thoughts. Obviously, the part one is about authenticity. If you listening to the show at all, then you know kind of the flow: authenticity, persuasion, and then the future of sales are the three parts. If you're new, welcome. It's a great place to start because the conversation I had with April was amazing. I absolutely love it. You know, there's some kind of observational bias that I have for sure because it's not just that I pick guests that I agree with, but the kind of people who say yes to coming on a podcast are also the same people who believe in certain things and are open and curious and want to share and want to be a part of it. There's something interesting about it because there's also a whole ton of people that I asked to come on the show as far as professors, and they either didn't respond or they said no or they said yes and then ghosted me, and we don't hear them on the show. And who knows if they would agree with me or not. The people who said no or think they're too important to come on a podcast or think they're right and some consultant dude who has a podcast is wrong because I'm not an academic, like, they're probably going to come on here if they did, and they would be talking about stuff that maybe I don't agree with, but we'll never know because they aren't here. And so the people who are here are amazing, and they're open, and they're excited to talk about this stuff and have a platform to be here. And so again, we have this observational bias or this result bias where the results we see are the people who are amazing. And so Dr. April Kemp is a great example of that, where we don't disagree on it. I love all the stuff she said. It's so amazing having these professors on the show because they're saying things that I agree with. What's also cool is they're not saying it exactly the same way I do because they're doing their research. They have their different background. And so it's just slightly different spins on it, which is why I love having it. I remember talking to April before the podcast. And again, I haven't even gotten into what we want to talk about. But before having her on the show, she's like, I don't know. Why would you want to? Like, I'm probably going to say the same thing as everyone else. And I'm like, no, everyone has a different opinion, a different background, a different experience prior to getting into higher ed and teaching. And then in higher ed and teaching, different universities have different focus, are run differently, different research that everyone's doing. And so everyone has a slightly different approach. I mean, there's some general fundamentals, some things that are the same. And then there's just things that everyone's just got a different mindset to, right? Like last week, Jim Pauley talking about mental health and well-being. That's not what everyone's research is about. Like Dr. April's research, when you listen to part three, is about the silos in organizations between marketing and sales and things like that. And so everyone kind of believes the same thing, and then they have their own focus, which is amazing. So let's talk about authenticity. One of the big things that she said is that if we really look at it, and this is the main aspect of Dr. Dover's book, Howard Dover wrote a book called Sales Innovation Paradox. And so she's talking about it where, and this is important for authenticity in sales, but people are searching for solutions and they're further in the conversations, and you have to understand that where they're coming from and where they're at in the process so that you can meet them, right? Is think about how we all search. And I thought about this too. I was like, wait, I need to create more content around this, which is how do I fix this problem, right? How do I change the headlight bulb in my car? How do I get my sink to stop dripping? So that's what we do, and that's what your potential customers are searching, and then that's what's in their mind, and then you have to meet them there. Now, we move that into the authenticity piece, and part that I loved that she was talking about was social styles. Please make sure to listen to that around the 8.5 minute mark. If you haven't listened to the full episode or you just want to skip to it, 8.5 minutes in, she says it's about understanding yourself, and then also understanding where your customers are coming from and their social styles, their observable traits, like how people act in social settings or with each other, and then understanding that and picking up on those cues. Now, here's one thing that I will say is there's things like personality and behaviors, Myers-Briggs, DISC. I use something that's a little bit different to that, but is in that same, you know, four-part behavior matrix style, right? It's simpler and easier to use. There's all kinds of things that you could use. Now we've got social selling as far as social styles, as far as observable traits. There's you could get into Enneagram, you can get into love languages, you could get into astrology. Once you really know that, there's a lot of things that will help you. When you're in a sales role, it's tough because you may or may not have enough time to really dive into engagement with somebody to fully understand all of that stuff so that you can use it so that you can have a conversation for their benefit. Again, this isn't for manipulation. This is how do I help you with the way that you want to be helped, right? It's not the golden rule. It's the platinum rule. And I forget who came up with that for sales, but the golden rule is I'm gonna treat you like I want to be treated. I'm going to sell to you the way I like to be sold to, which is terrible. And it's detrimental to anyone's sales career. The platinum rule is I'm going to treat you the way that you want to be treated, not the way I want to be treated. And so that is a totally different beast. And so the big thing is that is there's so many tools and things you can do. Just be careful you don't get too overwhelmed. A lot of times people think, oh my God, I got to understand this. It's like, just play the long game. Figure out what you're doing from a sales perspective. Then get really good at that where it's your unconscious competence, where you just know it without even having to think about what you're going to say next. And then you can do the sales part. And then you can add on all these other layers. So don't get overwhelmed when you hear this from myself, people on the show, or other content out there. Take it bit by bit. Just try to improve a little bit all the time, over time. The other part that she said in part one, which is so important, was that the customer is the hero, not the company is the hero. And your goal is to help the customer get to a win. Whatever that win is, that's where you want to get to, is that the customer is the hero. And again, I've said this on an episode last week, is that so many people in sales are still making themselves the hero, and it just doesn't work. It's not what people want. People want to be the hero themselves. So now let's get into part two, which is the persuasion piece. In persuasion, one of the big things that she said was that, you know, teaching spin selling, that a lot of times students hear problem and they want to prescribe the solution right then, right? It's one of those things where if you're doing the discovery process, so many people in sales are like asking questions, almost like a lawyer on the stand, where you're trying to figure out how to get that person to be guilty, right? Think about, and this is a funny movie for me to reference, but I absolutely love it, especially for the scene is Legally Blonde, the court scene at the end. I will spoil it. If you haven't watched it by now, I don't know why not, but the big thing is at the end, like she has no idea what she's doing. She's not really an attorney. She's in law school, and she's just going through the process and trying to figure out a way to win or get this person to admit something that could be useful. Then she stumbles on something and then just drills down and then wins the case in that moment. And there's so many people in sales where you're doing that, where you're just like asking questions, you're trying to find the problem, you're waiting until someone says the problem, and then you pounce on telling them the solution or providing it then, or selling them, you know, instantly going into the sales pitch or the deck, or like, oh, you have this problem, let me go into this. Instead of continuing to ask questions and digging deep and learning so much about the situation. Again, I see so many people people who show up, they ask some questions, they figure out what the problem is within a minute or two, and they instantly jump into the sales portion. But again, there's no value. There's no reason for that. There's no reason that somebody would care. You don't really know deep enough. You just know the surface. Oh, you need a car? Oh, that's great. I have a car. It's like, that would be, then you're just basically an order taker or a pushy salesperson because you're going to try to make the sale without complete information. And so make sure, this is what she said, listen, every situation is unique. Help them meet their goals. It's about them. And then so many salespeople don't follow up, don't show up, they're not present in this. And that's a huge lesson to take. It's so important. Make sure you do that. And again, this is where part of the advice that I give about, called sales malpractice, is that prescription before diagnosis is malpractice, right? Just like if it was in the medical field. And so you don't want to give someone the prescription until you know what's wrong, but you also have to be careful and you have to follow the process so that you don't figure out the problem and instantly jump into a solution, because you're going to skip some steps. And it might work some of the time, but I promise it's not going to lead to a good closing rate. And it's also not going to lead to long-term clients, because at that point, you're just pushing a solution or taking orders. And I'm telling you, you'll have a long-term retention, a long-term lifetime value issue, and it just won't be as effective. I promise that's what's going to happen with you if you just follow that pattern of, oh, you've got this problem, I've got this solution, right? Just doesn't work. All right. Last part, talking about the future of sales. I mentioned it early on. Her big thing with her research is right now she's looking at marketing and sales and the silos that happen. If you're not familiar with it, that term refers to like everyone treating their own department in their own way and kind of ignoring or not worrying about everybody else in the company as far as the other departments. Playing their own game. They have their own scoreboard. They have their own rules. They have their own metrics, and they don't super care about what's going on. Now, the problem with that is that it's one company that's trying to win and succeed at what it does, and it's one customer down at the bottom that doesn't care about the departments. The customer wants a solution, wants help, wants to get to a better place, and so they don't care what marketing's KPIs are, and they don't care what sales' KPIs or comp plan says, and they don't care what customers, like, they don't care. They only care about themselves and getting to a better place. And so what happens is you then have this disjointed organization, which so many are like this, pretty much all of them are, where you have these silos and marketing is playing marketing's game so that marketing can win at marketing's game and either look good or make more money or succeed or protect themselves or keep from getting fired or whatever it might be. And then sales is playing their game, and then sales thinks they're nobody else could survive without them and that everyone needs them more than they need everyone else, which is not correct, because again, it's one company and it's one customer. Nobody is more important in an organization. Everyone is important. Now, you can't have customers without sales, but you can't have customer fulfillment or tech or operations or whatever it is that the company is selling without without that part, right? Sales is useless if there's nothing actually being done. And even if it's a product, something's being sold, well, someone has to design the product, create the product. Like there's that part as well. So no part of the organization is more important than anyone else. Everybody is vital. Problem is everyone's playing their own game. And so her research is talking about working together and really breaking down those silos, because the silos are the detriment to any organization succeeding long term. Because what happens is you have all these people playing their own game and they think everyone else is wrong and they think they're right. Right? Like they are that person who went to this college and thinks their college and their team is better than everyone else and they don't want to listen to anyone else. And it truly doesn't matter what anyone else says, except everyone's supposed to be playing together for one common good. And that's just not what's happening. So that's important research. I think that's so big. If you're running an organization, you've got to put that into mind and think, all right, how do we break down these silos? How do we work together? I did a conversation a few years ago with someone where it was like the transparency, the data being available, like everyone has to be playing the same. Like it's so tough, but it's important to do it. And then the last part, talking about the future of sales, is that buyers are doing their research. They're going further in the process, like I talked about in the beginning of the authenticity episode. And so what are you doing? Where is your company with their website for finding a solution? Because people are going further down the research process prior to wanting to talk to a salesperson, because they don't want to waste their time with a salesperson. They don't want to be pitched something from a salesperson that's not applicable to them. They don't want to have to deal with it. They don't want to have to deal with telling someone no, or the endless follow-up that's going to happen if they're not interested. And so most people know that's coming, so they don't even want to play that game, which means they're going to wait until the very last second to engage with you. So two things that are important. What is your website doing? What do you have out there online to help people get to the point where they want to have a conversation with you? And then for me, what's most important with the clients that I work with is, what are you doing to maximize that brief time you have with that potential customer to give them everything they're looking for and build value and move them forward, right? I think the stat is something like 13 or 17% of the sales process is now interactions with the salesperson, which means roughly 80% of the time, 80% of the buying decision-making process is happening before dealing with a human. That's how much people don't want to deal with salespeople. And so if you have 13 to 17% of the buyer decision-making journey as your conversations and interaction, are you maximizing that 13 to 17%? Right? Like, imagine if this was basketball and there's a long game being played and you're that person, like a big shot Bob, Robert Horry, or a Steve Kerr, or any of that. If you're a basketball fan, you know some of these names, where you have one job, which is to sink basically game-winning three-pointers or critical three-pointers. Right. And his name is Robert Horry from the Lakers. He's called Big Shot Bob because literally he would not play much all game, come in the final minutes of the last quarter, be given the ball, and then make that game winning three pointer or that impactful three pointer. Same thing with Steve Kerr. Right. Cold off the bench. So good at your job where you literally only need 30 seconds out of a 48 minute game. Or 60 minute game or whatever to do your thing. Right. So are you so amazing that when it comes time for you to shine, are you absolutely crushing it? Do you have a great process? Do you know what you're doing? Do you know what to say? Do you know how to lead things and move people forward at scale and be a professional and a guide and a mentor instead of a hero like we talked about earlier? So hopefully this helps. Make sure to check out the three episodes with Dr. April Kemp, and appreciate you being here. And as always, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.